Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time, a CadSource production. As entrepreneurs, we are all dealing with something, either directly or indirectly. It may be business related, it may be something happening today, or it may have something to do with health. In my family, my wife and two daughters have all been diagnosed with celiac disease. As we've attempted to learn more about celiac, we've come across some amazing people. That's why I am creating the Celiac Series. These people are taking celiac head on and they are building something special at the same time. They are entrepreneurs, they are creators, and they are courageous. This episode exists because of CadSource. CadSource is your content team. You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story? That's what we do. Content strategy, creation, and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at CadSource, we exist to help you create and share amazing content. And yes, you should have a podcast. We'll help you. Learn more by visiting kezcontent.com. Whether you have celiac, know someone that has celiac, or want to learn more about celiac, I hope this series can provide insights and thoughts for you to explore more. While this is absolutely for the celiac community and for celiac awareness, it's also for people dealing with something, anything. We all are. No one is alone, and as entrepreneurs, we need to find ways to keep going, to have purpose, to share stories, and to connect. So we plan on featuring leaders to share their story and to then connect through those stories. It's all about content and connections. It just so happens this story and this series is about celiac. In this Celiac Series podcast episode, we feature two prominent members of the celiac community. And as it turns out, they connected through content, the Celiac Project documentary, which is available on Amazon Prime. The two guys will get into this shortly. Michael Frolickstein and Cam Weiner are those two guys. They're also the two guys talking gluten-free on the Celiac Project podcast. You can learn more about them at celiacproject.com. You can find them on all podcast players, and you can watch the Celiac Project documentary on Amazon Prime Video. For now, let's get into the Celiac Series episode featuring two people who I'm most thankful for, Mike Frolickstein and Cam Weiner. Cam, I've talked to Michael before multiple times, and I'm going to get into that. But I was like, okay, well, I want to know a little bit more about Cam, like kind of the backstory. And then I came across this thing of how you guys met. And if I'm not mistaken, you guys were in the public library and you had introduced yourself to Michael because I believe you had seen the documentary. Mm-hmm. How did that take place? Because I'm into that like serendipity of how people connect. And next thing you know, years later, you guys are hosting a podcast together.
Yeah, this is probably, I would say, one of the most serendipitous events of my life for sure. Because looking back on it, it's so strange, the timing and how everything worked out. But at that point, I had been diagnosed with celiac for about a year. It was still kind of confusing for me though, like navigating because I was still getting sick very often and trying to find where I was on that spectrum of sensitivity. And I would Google celiac as a keyword to find news sources or whatever was coming out there in the ether. And it was so random that there happened to be a documentary and it was screening only one town away, basically. I mean, not one town away, but 15 sure. minutes away.
Yeah.
And you had to register just to make sure there was enough seats. And it was me and my dad. And then we went on the day of the screening and watched it. And it was the most moving piece of celiac content I had seen thus far. And I would still say the most impactful thing out of everything that I've come across so far, because it explained the situation to my family. And I was able to use the movie to help other people where if I was explaining it, they would either underreact or overreact. And this kind of put things in the right middle ground for them. But yes, at the end of the screening, I wanted to pay respects to the creator. And so there was a short little line of people talking to Mike, and I overheard a word, cutters, which for most people, that's not a positive thing to hear. But for us, this was actually the name of a company that we both worked at. And so it was really strange. I didn't know of Mike at all. And we weren't in the same state of that company because that company had a couple locations. And I had previously worked at the Los Angeles location, which was when I got sick, I had to leave that job. And so when I met Mike, I brought up, I was like, hey, I overheard Cutters. Did you work there? And he's like, yeah, I worked at the Chicago location. And it was just like so strange. So now that was the first connection. Then there's obviously the Celiac connection. And then both of us are local to the North Chicago suburbs. And we're just like, yeah, let's connect. And then we actually met up at a Barnes and Noble after that. And we just started having celiac discussion. I was just talking about the movie. We were talking about different current events and stuff. And I think we were there for like 2 hours, maybe 2.5 hours. And it flew by. And then we were leaving and we were like, wow, that was such an energizing conversation. We should definitely talk this topic again. And then side note, I'm at this point already a very big podcast enthusiast. When I was living in Los Angeles, that's what I used as my content for commuting. And I lived on a skateboard, so it was 5 mile rides everywhere I was going. So I'd get cranked through 2-3 hour podcasts in a couple of days. So I then brought up the idea that we should probably continue our conversations on celiac and gluten-free things, but just record them. And so that was how it all started. So long story short.
No, it's an important story to hear. I mean, content created content and celiac created this connection. And I think that's amazing because we talk about content a lot. And Mike, you created this documentary and somehow you make this amazing connection with this person who you have this long lasting relationship with. And it's an important relationship. And Cam, you talked about how it was like the most serendipitous moment of your life to come across this individual. And I can only imagine how Mike's helped you and vice versa. I mean, I could sit here and say, when we were talking earlier, my wife and my two daughters have been diagnosed with celiac. And every single time, you know, the first time it was, I got to learn about celiac. Where do I go to learn about it? I just started like you did. I was Googling it. Well, I went into, I think it was Spotify, and I just typed in celiac. Like, I have no idea what's going to come in these search results. And I found a couple of podcasts and yours was one of them. And then I reached out and we talked about this on the last time we had you on, Mike, and I found you on LinkedIn and reached out and we just connected and we had a phone conversation and on and on and on. So that became, in my own way, therapy for myself to just figure out what is learning knowledge. Like, how do I acquire more information about this? Because you just don't know. And then I remember this was end of last year, right? I believe, or maybe it was the beginning of this year. I'm sorry, because it was when the quarantine started and only one person can go into the hospital to do this with my youngest daughter, Chloe, to have the scope done. And Mike, I called you while I was walking the streets outside of the hospital and you talked to me. And then I let you know it's the same thing. So Kim, I could only imagine to have someone like this on your side to just have these conversations with. I just talked to someone else and they're entrepreneurs and they have a podcast they started called Founders Therapy. And it was very similar. They're having these conversations. They're very therapeutic. They're like, we need to hit the record button on these because I think there's other people out there like us that want to talk about it. But the content created that connection. Mike, I see you over there just like nodding along with what Cam was saying, what I was saying. And obviously, I don't know if that was necessarily the point to make new connections that way. But man, you create this documentary and then you start creating this podcast. This is creating connections.
Right, exactly. And I'm so glad you called me. I'll talk about when you called me because we as the dads, we bonded to Eric on that moment because I had a moment with my youngest daughter where we both, where there was like one parent led into a procedure. And so we bonded on that because these are the times we're living in. Yeah. And just to pick up on what Cam was saying too, and what you're saying, I knew when I made the documentary that it was the beginning of a conversation. And I knew that I wanted to continue. That a lot of times, you know, people watch the documentary and there's only a certain amount. And maybe I said this when I was on your podcast last time, Eric, but there's only so much you can do in an hour long program of any kind. And so my goal was to raise awareness and to really give a face, as Cam was saying, thank you, Cam, for that very nice assessment. But my goal was really to demystify celiac disease for people going through this and to actually have a tool to share with their loved ones with good information, the best experts to kind of show what it's like, both from the patient side and the medical side of celiac. And I knew that we needed a way to then sort of have bite-sized chunks of different subjects. So it was so serendipitous for Cam and I, for Cam to be at that screening and for us to meet. And there was an instant chemistry I never said this, I think, to Cam. And maybe because it's in my mind, this is the way I see it. And I know you deal in sports a lot. And it's sort of, I've seen this as our relationship because, Eric, you brought up how it is to have two hosts on a podcast. And I always have, or I've seen it as it's evolved, like almost like a team that's doing play-by-play and color commentary. And I think I see myself, and again, I'm trying not to maybe look too much behind the curtain where maybe Cam's going to hear this and go, why do you see that this way? I hope this doesn't mess up our relationship. It's a little bit, they're wider brushstrokes than this, but I see myself almost as the play-by-play and Cam is the color commentary, where that's something I think, I feel like we both look at when we do a podcast, we have a little different approach that both those approaches work and complement each other. And it's different when we don't have a guest, like when that's more like when we have a guest and when we're doing a show with a topic. But I do think, I don't know, what do you think of that, Cam? That was something a while back, you know, we're about 4 years plus into this. And I think that's why it works, because I feel like we understand, like we're both ourselves and that's the main thing. But I think we both bring different skills and a different like point of view.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I would say we tend to agree on things, which in those cases can be boring. But then in those instances, it's exactly like you're saying, I'm more of the color commentary in that situation. Like, cause you'll say something and then I'll come up with an alternative analogy to re-explain the same idea. But then there's those moments where we disagree, and that's what makes it interesting, because we can graciously disagree. Yeah, it's interesting how that goes.
You guys just did it recently. I'll bring up a point because, yeah, I see the Joe Buck, Troy Aikman analogy that we have going on right now, right? You guys had the probiotic discussion, and Cam, you disagreed. You had your own perspective. And I think it's interesting, and I don't know why this is, like, celiac has so much confusion around it already. Like, not just from people, not just from restaurants, but the medical world. And I think that's one of the most frustrating experiences, because where are we going? What's going to happen? What's next? What does someone even do? My wife, it took her 7 years to be diagnosed. And this wasn't like just because she was sitting on her hands like, I don't know what to do. She was out there. She was advocating for herself like someone I've never seen do before for her own health. And she was seeing professionals. She was seeing medical people. She was reading about it. She started to get her integrative nutrition, right? And then after that, she's now getting her master's in applied nutrition. But there was so much that she was doing and still couldn't get diagnosed. So I think it's important that you guys go into this and have these discussions. We don't know all the science behind it, and that's super frustrating. But you guys, again, I just said, you just did it on the podcast, and it made me think, because we talk about probiotics a lot. And we're like, well, maybe that could help. And Cam, you were like, no, it didn't help me. That actually hurt me. And everyone had different experiences. So you definitely played off of that. And going on that a little bit, Cam, you talked about being diagnosed, I think it was 2015, but what was your journey like? I guess I could ask that question of, like, how long did it take, do you think, to get diagnosed with celiac?
Yeah, so it was actually April 2013, but 2015 was probably the first time that I started normalizing everything out, because I think the whole first year was a wash. I wasn't given proper information. And so I sought out my own information, and it was a lot of like opinion-based stuff at the time. So I remained sick for that first year, probably just the same as if I was still eating gluten at full capacity. So how things transpired for me, though, was it was kind of severe in the beginning, in that I couldn't take care of myself. So I had to move home to reconnect with family, because I couldn't afford my rent because work was getting all out of whack, and they let me go, actually. So I got put on COBRA, which is like an insurance thing. And so I'm using up my time on insurance as best I can, because I was going to be getting to that point too, where I'd be getting taken off my parents' insurance. So it was just running all the tests possible and going to all the different specialists and trying to figure out any loose ends. Like, are there any alternative medical issues that are going on that celiac may have caused, or that are just, that may exist in my situation? And so I ended up finding out a bunch of things that I was allergic to food-wise. And since then, as I talk on our podcast, a lot of the allergens have actually gone away. So I'm learning about my own immune system, probably things that aren't even in literature, because it's just not something that's been tested before. So it's just been so wild, because I've had
full on reactions. And now I don't for certain food items, but this is long time scale. So like I said, that's 2013 to now, that's 7 years. But I think my diet hit two plateau points where things got cleaned up and I kind of had two different versions of gluten-free. I had the basic version, which was reading labels and just making the most educated decisions you possibly can. And that did a lot for me, but I was still very symptomatic for a handful of years. And I mean, even to this day, I'm semi-symptomatic. Like I had to adjust my lifestyle now to whatever is the symptoms that I'm experiencing. And it's not that I'm saying I'm getting glutened all the time still, but I think I have incurred a certain amount of damage that has caused some sensitivities elsewhere that just is now I'm managing that as it is. But the second time my diet took a plateau change was when I got into the gluten detection dog scene. And when I trained my dog, Lacey, to detect gluten, I started finding a couple other things that were supposed to be safe by the book, but in reality weren't. And I also then found out and realized that I was more sensitive than I thought I was. I wanted to believe that I wasn't. And so I think I took more risks in the beginning than I should have, but never was going out of my way on purpose to eat gluten, not like that, not cheating, but just not being as cautious as possible. And then as I became more and more cautious, things really did start to even out and the energy got better, the sleep got better, less nausea, less all the other symptoms.
Do you have other autoimmune going on as well?
So I got to remember what it's called now. It was weird because it's not something that's health concerning. So I don't even know if they put it in my medical records, but okay. My hands and feet, the blood leaves them and they get really cold.
Okay.
It's like a comorbid that goes with a lot of other autoimmune diseases. But no, I don't have any officially diagnosed, but I fall into a bunch of camps where I probably could get diagnosed for like POTS or something like that. Because like I used to, and I like I said, this goes back to like the allergen thing. When I was more symptomatic and still healing from being gluten for so many years, I had like collapse syncope situations where a certain level of pain, and it'd be so random and it would depend on the day and my blood sugar and all these other things. And then I'd pass out. So like one time I was skateboarding in the backyard and the board popped up and hit me in the shin kind of hard and it stung and I should be able to rub my shin and be like, ah, darn, and then move on from it. But it was weird. And then over the next 5 minutes, I was passing out. The doors were closing. And this is it's related to blood pressure and all of that. And there's some techniques you can use to get through it. But anyway, the point was, is that now if I took that same hit, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. It's interesting because as you're talking about it, like if you were to try to explain this to somebody, it's so hard to do and they don't understand it. And you made a point earlier about the documentary, The Celiac Project, which by the way, just going to say this, we'll put it in the show notes, but it's on Amazon, right? And you guys can talk more about where else you can get it, but just go buy it on Amazon. You have to watch it. You probably know someone that has celiac, but I did the same exact thing. I shared it with family members. I've shared it with other people because it has that impact because it's like so hard to even explain it. Just watch this. And I think that's going to go a long way for you and for anybody in the family, just to understand when I come to your house for dinner, like it's complicated. There's so much uncertainty around it. And that's why this is so important. This is obviously a big reason why we continue to talk for many reasons. And you talked about your dog, right? There's so much happening. You hear about cancer sniffing dogs, right? And I've heard this before. So clearly this has worked for you.
Yeah.
Now, where does the dog get trained to sniff for gluten?
I did the training myself. So this is another serendipitous situation, but more makes sense. On our podcast, we had a guest on, Dawn Choi, who is a Willow service dogs. And she was the first person that I was aware of that trained a gluten detection dog. And we reached out to her. I actually had Googled that and found that when I was still in California before I had even moved back. And it was just kind of sitting in the back of my mind. And then when me and Michael started the podcast up, it was the first reason that I ever had to reach out to this person because, like I said before, I wasn't thinking I was that sensitive. I never thought this was going to be something I needed. And even when we had her on as a guest, it wasn't something I thought I needed. And so we had her on though, and that was when I learned that this existed and learned about Dawn's backstory. She was an EMT in Detroit and did urban search and rescue stuff. And she has celiac. And then so she needed to train her dog so that she could be safe because she has a more severe case than even I do.
Yeah. So. Well, we have two dogs at home, so I know what we're doing this weekend, right? We're going to start looking into this some more.
Definitely.
Mike, it's interesting because we're sitting here as three guys, and we talked about this last time that you hear a lot of things in health. It's very, a lot of women have podcasts or blogs about talking about these things. And I think you set out to say, it's just two guys talking gluten, right? That's what like your tagline. And it's hard, right? Because I fall in that camp. Like there was times where I didn't want to talk about how I was feeling, about my health and all these things. And that may be one of the reasons why your podcast resonated with me, because it was you guys out there talking about it. And that was important. But you speak about this quite a bit. And I want you to talk about this here today, because for various reasons, one, for the celiac community, but for anybody who's looking to create something. And if it's around the health world, like it can be two guys talking about that health related thing.
I'm so glad you brought this up, Eric, because as Cam was talking about some of the struggles that he's even been through since we started the podcast, we've been able to be completely transparent about any health issues that either of us are going through. And I think the feedback we get from our listeners is that it's sort of mind-blowing to them, right? And I realized when we started this, as you're saying, Eric, that there weren't enough guys talking about their health, talking, I think, honestly and openly about things like this, that we're in a culture that sort of taught grit your teeth. And I think that's why mortality rates for guys are higher around certain things, is because, unfortunately, we don't talk about it. You know, Chadwick Boseman died of colon cancer, which is something that my father got diagnosed with. And so I had understanding of that, and I'm not trying to make it a bigger talk about cancer, but as an example, this was a relatively young person, and that sparked talk of, we have to discuss these health things. Like, people don't want to talk about colon cancer. They don't want to talk about symptoms they're having often around celiac, have to do with your stomach and these kind of things. So I feel the more as a society that we can demystify this, and the more we kind of can deal with it head on, because I think it's really refreshing. I think Cam gives me courage to talk, because he doesn't think twice about sharing with everybody what he's going through. And I think it's so helpful to the listeners, and it gives them courage in their own lives to say, I'm going to talk to my doctor, I'm going to talk to my loved ones. I shouldn't be scared of talking about these things, because we really need to talk about them, keep them out in the forefront so people can get diagnosed with issues. Because celiac, what we've talked about, Eric, and thank you for the nice plug of the film, is that your wife is like me. You know, I was a kid who had all these different symptoms, ranging from GI symptoms later to headaches to seizures, and never had someone see that this could be celiac disease. And just looking back, how different my life would have been if I could have been diagnosed with this in my 20s, not at 40. And so I'm just trying to help people, if this is something that they're dealing with, that they can get the help they need. Because as you're learning with your family and having your daughters and your wife diagnosed, this is a family affair. And often I know people, some of them that I've known for a long time, who say, yeah, I have it, but my mother, my uncle have all the symptoms, but they don't want to change their lifestyle. They're scared of getting diagnosed. But what's really scary is finding out that you have some of these cancers that go along with having undiagnosed celiac. So don't want to get on my soapbox too much about that, but I think it's important that we raise the awareness and raise the rates of diagnosis, because celiac is treatable. It's right now you have to be on a 100% gluten-free diet. And I know that's a bummer to people who think that it is socially make your life harder, and there's a lot of that goes with that. But hey, it's a lot better, like Cam was saying, to get your health back and to be able to get back to a good baseline. And we don't have to be on high powered drugs and this kind of thing. So I see, when my diagnosis happened, it was the greatest thing in my life. And it also led me to meeting amazing people like you. So it's all good. We have to talk about these things.
Yes, absolutely. There's so many different directions we can go with all of this. And I'll mention a few, but you do eat better. You really watch your ingredients. My wife was always good at that, but it's like to the next level, we're watching the ingredients. So we're all eating. My son and I, who are not gluten-free, we do not have celiac. our house is gluten-free. We're outnumbered and for obvious reasons. So we went to that place. Now, him and I might, when we're out and about, if we're by ourselves, we might go get a sandwich, but understanding that the house is gluten-free and we are going to eat better. But you talking about it, you sharing these stories, we need awareness around it. I mean, I would ask you the question, and you might know or you might not know, or we might have estimates, and I've seen some stuff, but I feel like a lot of people have celiac that don't know it. That's obviously the case. It took my wife 7 years. So for 7 years, she had it and didn't know it. Do we have an estimate of how many people that are out there that have celiac that don't know it?
So they say between 83 and 85% undiagnosed. And that was the number when the film came out. It was done in 2015, so 5 years ago. And that needle stats that I've read has not moved a lot. And then there's other theories where we've had Dr. Liu, who's from Denver, Colorado Children's Hospital, saying that there are theories that celiac disease is on the rise and they're still trying to figure out what's behind that. So it's still hugely underdiagnosed. Like even if that needle, even if it's moved to sort of 85 to 83, that's 83 to 85% undiagnosed. And it's a weird number because I think they're making a guess based on the stats that are out there. If you don't know who has it, it's hard to know, but it's woefully undiagnosed. And I think part of it is that it's only recent that groups and others are like us are shouting about it. Because the awareness when I was diagnosed, which was about 12 years ago, it just was not well known at all. I mean, I would go into restaurants and you'd have to say you have a gluten allergy. And now, at least when you go into a restaurant, I think you and I have talked about this, Eric, when you say celiac disease, there's much more recognition. But even like I'm saying, 12 years ago, I'd walk in and people would not know what gluten is, not know what celiac disease is. So I think we've come a long way in a relatively short period of time. And my hope is we'll go even farther now that there's a lot more knowledge coming out about it.
Well, it's hard to get tested for it, right? And I don't know, Kim, what you dealt with when you had to get tested. I mean, just when my daughter, who was the last one to be diagnosed, my wife has it, my youngest has it, let's get the test, right? This should be very easy. And it wasn't that hard, but we still had to go through this process to get the test. Like, we almost feel like it should be an automatic test. Like, you're doing blood tests already, just throw that in there. And for whatever reason, it's just, you can't do it. And I can only imagine, like, it almost seems like a lot of people aren't even have access to that test if they don't have the resources.
Yeah, for me, it was a little bit random and a little bit lucky because I definitely had symptoms that should have been very obvious. And I don't want to say it's bad doctors. They just didn't know what to look for. They weren't taught and educated on it. But all of my pediatric doctors completely missed it. And there were definitely plenty of instances for them to catch it. But I went through like dramatic weight loss in sophomore year of high school. I was at like 225 and I was just coming off of playing football for 3 years and I had gotten hit in the head too many times. I'm done. And my feet hurt. It was all sorts of things. I was just done with football. But I stopped playing and I wasn't like super muscly, but I was bigger and dense. And I dropped down to like 195 in a year. And then I went down to 175 by the next year. And then by the next year, I was at 160. And then I went down to 155. And that was when I think I got the diagnosis. So it was all like, where is all this weight going? And at the time, people around me are like, oh, that's a good thing because we don't want you to be bigger anymore. But then it got to a point where then I started getting like a little skeletal and that was not good. And so it was actually at work. My boss, actually, she's like, you don't look good. She gave me her car keys and she said, go to the, not the ER, but to the emergency clinic. And so I went there and they just ran. They're like, what's wrong? And I was like, I don't know. My boss made me come here. She says, I don't look good. And they're like, okay. And they just started running blood tests. And they're like, you have a virus. And I'm like, okay, I got a virus. So I took a week off of work. They gave me antibiotics, which probably really made things bad.
Yeah.
So I get back to work. They're like, you look so much better. And then like 2 days later, I go back to looking like how I did before. And they're like, do you have a doctor? And I have a job that I just got. I'm out of college. I'm in a different state. I don't have a doctor. But I do have family nearby and they have a doctor. So I got the connection and I went over there and I told them basically the same story of what I just told you. And they're like, all right, well, we're going to run some basic blood tests. And celiac was in their basic blood test panel. So it's like, wow, they're so cutting edge. This was in like Santa Monica. So it was pretty, they're very progressive in getting this sort of testing done. And then I got a phone call a week later when the blood test results came up and they're like, we're sending you to our GI to set up an appointment. I went there, I walked in, the dude looked at me and he's like, yeah, I think you have celiac just looking at you, and let's set up your endoscope. And bam, bam, endoscope. And then a week later, seemed like I was moving back home.
Yeah. When you guys had on the director at Celiac Disease Foundation, CDF, celiac.org, and she had talked about her husband was at Stanford Medical School, and they talked about celiac for about 10 minutes. And I kind of just brushed over it. So if you missed that day, you're like, what is that? So it makes sense that the medical community doesn't understand it. Do you think, you know, like, does it become standard testing, or does it become at least some that a doctor would understand, like, hey, maybe now is the time that we're going to start testing for the celiac more often?
So I've talked to a lot of people about this. It's interesting. It's standard testing from my understanding, Eric, in places like Italy, where much more was known about celiac like 20, 30 years ago, where kids are at a certain age and they have them tested. That would be amazing. And I've talked to different people about some of the barriers in this country. I mean, it's really strange because it's not an expensive test. Most insurances will cover it. So we're not at a place where there's going to be like standard testing for kids at a certain age from the doctors that we've talked to. And I will say this, I say this to our listeners, Cam says this to our listeners. It's like, I think some of the misunderstanding that even doctors have is that the University of Chicago estimates that there's about 300 different symptoms. So in the 70s, when celiac was thought to be more of a juvenile disease, at some point they even thought people outgrew it, which is not the case. There's been a lot of missteps as they've been researching it. And they thought it was always a child and it was always a distended belly and digestive issues in some sort of way. And now, of course, we know you can get diagnosed at any age. There can be in youth, there is often that distended belly, and that's a telltale sign. So I'm not pushing that to the side, but you can get diagnosed at any age. It so often can present in ways like, which appear to be something like rheumatoid arthritis, joint issues, migraine headaches, the list goes on and on. So I always say to people, if you have some strange symptoms, and I've talked to doctors while I was making the documentary and since we've had the podcast, and I think of Dr. Fasano and Dr. Leffler, who both happen to be in Boston, and they've both done different things where they've paid for clinics to have celiac tests on people who they can't find issues. So a lot of really great celiac doctors say, if you're having issues and you don't know what it is, have a celiac test, at least rule that out. And I will say this, it's not always going to be celiac disease, but at least you've checked that box. And I think that's what's most frustrating to me is that, like you're saying, Eric, it often is too hard to test for. Doctors have it. It's like a blind spot for doctors, because you brought up Marilyn Geller and her husband. And we've talked to plenty of doctors in med school. It's barely talked about, but it is much more prevalent than they used to think. There are many more different symptoms. And so at least every week, I think we get an email from someone who says, my doctor wouldn't test me, or my doctor was sure it wasn't this, and then it was this. And I just don't understand, because it's something that insurance covers. It starts with a blood test. The endoscopy is the gold standard, they say, for your final diagnosis. But it just seems like a no-brainer. If you're having a lot of problems, be it digestive, with migraines, with joint problems, skin problems, often it is celiac. So just to check that box off is, I think, a relief to people who can then move on. And if it's not celiac, but celiac should be much easier to diagnose.
Right. And if not, what you talked about is, we can just throw an antibiotic at it. We can throw the term IBS at it, like you kind of, Mike, that you were talking about, like it must be stomach issues. So let's throw this drug at it. And the antibiotic, for example, could just set you back even further. And that's frustrating. So it's like, before we start throwing out pharma at it, let's figure out actually what we're dealing with. And that's no doubt a frustrating part of it. And I think it even gets, it's a traumatic experience, right? Because where's the community? Because it's developing now, like thanks to people like yourselves that are out there and building this community. that we have places we go. We have people we can talk to. There's more knowledge out there, like I mentioned before, celiac.org, and there's other organizations as well. But it's very traumatic and it gets into the mental health aspect of it. And now we're starting younger and younger, like my daughters, they're at school. And well, they're sort of at school. This is a crazy year in and of itself for mental health. But what happens when you go to school is they bring desserts and you go to lunch and you have other kids out there and everyone's dealing with something. And, you know, just the other day, my daughter's playing on a basketball team. They had their first practice and they brought cupcakes and we had let them know and they were fine. My daughter has, this is my youngest. She'd already been through it before. So she's been in class. It still makes her feel bad. And she's sharing that with us. So she walked out. She's like, they offered me a cupcake. I said, I can't have it. It made me feel bad. It made me feel bad. But then she was okay and she moved on because she's been dealing with this. She's understanding it. We're having a lot of conversations and she's obviously very lucky to have my wife in this to have a better understanding of it. But I worry about that because the school that she goes to is a great school and they're doing their best, but it's very difficult to understand how someone would just show up to lunch and it's just complicated. Like my other daughter, she said, it's just more complicated. We go get ice cream. And it's just like the questions that they have to ask, like that's more the frustrating experience. She actually is doing better with choosing her foods and liking the foods, but there's just so many things that you have to do just to get your food ordered. And that's really tough. And I think it just, and I could see it, it just wears on them. And I think there's a big mental health thing that's going on with this as well that's coming up. I'm sure you've seen it, Mike, your daughter has it, and I'm sure you've witnessed this as well. And I think you've talked about on your podcast that it's actually been interesting because she hasn't been going to school, that she's been able to have the right foods right there in the kitchen, doesn't have to worry about that as much, but we're going to get back out there and it's going to come back, right?
Oh, exactly. And as someone who's now not a kid anymore, those social things are stressful for me. So I can't imagine how hard it is for your daughters and my daughter, because I hear those stories too, Eric. And it's heartbreaking because something else that we've been talking about on the podcast a lot lately is that with the way the world is now and schools in particular, they have to worry about this virus, right? And so our concern is that things like people being conscientious of different food allergies or celiac, things like that are going to be harder to pull back to the forefront. And hopefully we'll see how that stuff works. But yeah, it is really difficult at times as an adult. I've had plenty of times where I've just opted out of going to certain social kind of events because of that. And I don't want my daughter, I don't want your daughters to have to do that. It seems like a cop out. It seems like not the way it should be. So hopefully, as there's more understanding, more places can have safe options. Because if you're going to your cousin's wedding, many states away, and you're like, oh my God, now we have to start calling the caterers or bothering the bride and groom on the biggest day of their lives. This is not things that people want to do, but hopefully those things become more understood that we're doing this not to be creating havoc on your big day, but we just need to stay safe.
Yeah. There's opportunities, I think, in the celiac community, for example, to create a documentary, to create a podcast, to get involved in different organizations. We've thought about this. There's a restaurant consultant somewhere out there that could help these restaurants, that could help the staff, that could train them on what this is like, right? We've talked about this before, the croutons on the salad, the bread on the plate that could have been there. Oh, we'll just take the bread off. It doesn't work that way. There has to be this understanding and the impact that you are having on the people that are coming to your restaurant. I get it. Maybe the owner, maybe the chef. But there's so many people in that world that are going to touch that food, not touch the food necessarily, but they're going to be a part of that process. There has to be training and it's going to be nearly impossible to get it right 100% of the time. But I think there's a lot of opportunities in the celiac community to help out, to support. Do you all see anything that perhaps is missing? Is it something along the lines of like a restaurant consultant? There are things that you can think of, or any businesses maybe that exist, not businesses, but organizations that exist that are they're really making an impact in the celiac community?
I'll go first and then I'll let Cam give his thoughts. Because there are, so Beyond Celiac, I believe it's still associated with them, has a program called Great Kitchens. And we've had someone on long ago. I think it's Becky Moreland. I'm pulling that name out of the... Sometimes things stay in my brain anyways. But yeah, so she was running this program where they did go in to sort of teach and certify. And I know there's other programs that we've alluded to on the podcast too. So I think that is something that is available if restaurants really want to try to do things the right way. And I know now it's such a hard time for restaurants who are just trying to stay afloat. So that's another thing I say, Eric, to people. If you find restaurants that are treating you well, especially during like the pandemic, find ways to support them, because we know it's a rough time to be in the food industry in general. But so there are these programs and hopefully those keep going. I don't know, Cam, did you have any thoughts on that?
I was going to actually name the same one that you did. I think those restaurant groups are really, really good. And it's a good idea, because having an organization that can go through any restaurant and top to bottom tell you what you need to change and train your staff is exactly what is needed. But there's complications, because obviously if you lose an employee, then the next one needs to be retrained. And there are simple training procedures, but it's not the most simple. So it's a lot to invest. And definitely, like with the pandemic situation, restaurants are getting hit so bad, regardless if they have specialty clients. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to hold for the future. I think right now what we need is there needs to be more delivery options and more certified gluten-free food items that can be shipped around. And I know a lot of those products, the deterrent for me is price. So I know that price is also a factor when you're getting into gluten-free items. And I know there's the tax write-off for celiacs, where you're supposed to be able to write off the difference between a gluten-free and alternative not gluten-free item. But I do know that this is a significant factor for people, is how much the gluten-free labeled foods impact their budget. Because I'm not talking about like apples and potatoes.
Well, that's something, Mike, that we had talked about before. We were just going back and forth and exchanging some ideas. So, Cam, I'm really glad you brought that up. There's a few things going on there, right? Because people have different experiences at different restaurants. Find Me Gluten-Free, you can see these different experiences. Had the best experience ever, 5-star review, you go, and this is like any restaurant, right? And a 1-star review, there was bread on my plate. Things like that. I think Find Me Gluten-Free is a great app. It's a great research tool to have at your disposal, but then you're still, it changes, like you said, Cam. I mean, there could have been they have a new manager there and they don't care as much about it. The delivery options right now, DoorDash, Uber Eats, for example, where we are, Burger 21, they take gluten-free very serious, but I've also seen it not be as good at another time, right? And so it's confusing. You bring up that point though, and I was getting to earlier about price. It's frustrating that this is not the exact same. But it's like if someone had a handicap sticker and they had to park at a handicap spot, that you're going to charge them more to park there. When someone orders gluten-free food, they automatically are paying more, like most of the time. I haven't seen it not that way. And I get it. Perhaps they had to special order the gluten-free dough at the pizza place. I get that. It might be more expensive. But at the same time, it's like you're getting penalized for having celiac. It's beyond frustrating, Mike. I know you were like kind of nodding along with that. And we had had this email before. But again, I think there's this common theme of frustration. There's a lot of positive, like we talked about as well. But when we're dealing with the medical community, the food, there is these just frustrating aspects of it. We can solve it, but tell this quick story. But my middle daughter, one who was last diagnosed, she loved dumplings, like just love dumplings. Let's find dumplings anywhere we can find them. Well, now you can't have them. But we found them at Fresh Market. They have gluten-free dumplings. And like she is wearing them out because she found what she loves so much. So we got there. It just took some time. But anyway, overall, it is frustrating. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say it's doing those slippery slopes, Eric. Because of course, if I was putting things in order, having safe options comes first, right? But cost is a big deal. And I have a couple places in mind that treat us so well, and then you get your bill. And because we have 3 or 4 always in our group, maybe more now. Yeah, we have between me and my, if we are out with my sister, my nephew, my daughter, and my wife, who are all gluten-free, 3 of us with celiac, there tends to be that $2 upcharge for the gluten-free buns. And I don't want this to sound like sour grapes, because the first and most important thing is we don't get sick, right? But to have that extra $10 or whatever on our bill, I feel like some of those places do just absorb it. And it would be a nice thing. I really do like your point about if you're handicapped and you don't get charged extra to park in the handicap space. And I will say this, a lot of people are eating gluten-free who don't have the medical necessity. That's probably the difference, right? So for my first hope is that the places go through the extra steps to get us safe gluten-free options. I do understand that sometimes they have to do the upcharge. Many of these places, I would think, could absorb that because you've got us as customers for life, but easier for me to say because I'm not running a restaurant, right?
Right. Yeah, there's a bagel place that we go to that's in South Carolina. So it's like 45 minutes away and they get bagels gluten-free and they're shipped in from New York and they are expensive. They're more expensive. But like you said, it's an opportunity at bagel. So we're fine paying the price, but I understand it. And a lot of people, like you said, if you're in college or just out of school and you have celiac, like it's just not manageable. And I didn't know about the tax write-off. I don't know if that's in certain states, Illinois, California. Like we've talked about this before in certain cities, it's just like celiac, what's that? And that's when you know you need to leave, but there's just a lot of confusion about it.
I think it's a national thing and it's a percentage, right? So it's a percentage that you can write off because it's medical necessity. I think you have to prove celiac, but talk to an accountant or look online, but there should be information about that. And I will say my last thing about the price of things is that when I first got diagnosed, it's actually in the documentary, Rose's Wheat Free Bakery was right in my neighborhood. Rose is a great friend of ours. And one day we were having a support group at Rose's and everybody was trying to, you know, we were trading our favorites of things to buy and someone complained about, yeah, you buy a muffin and it costs $6 or something. And Rose heard this and was like walking by, like bussing tables. And she said, running this business is like having a not-for-profit in that as I got to know her and interviewed her for the documentary, she was saying how she had to buy separate flours to make, she wanted to make healthier flours. So she had chickpea flour and she had to, these weren't readily available flours. And just to explain to people why things are more expensive, you buy them in smaller bunches. You have to go to specialty places who have incurred more fees to make these flours as opposed to buying wheat flour, which is comparison much cheaper by the pound. So there is a reason that these things are more expensive. And in fact, she eventually had to go out of business, which was a big loss for our community. So it is rough. We all kind of grit our teeth, as Cam was alluding to, buying a sleeve of bagels from one of these bakeries. But I also feel good that I'm supporting these bakeries, even if I have to sort of cut back on some of my other extravagances in my life.
Yes. People are dealing with stuff and there's many reasons why I want to talk about celiac and have it on the podcast and just have conversations like all the things that we've talked about and learning and just, you know, going down this path and helping everybody else around me and helping myself too for that matter. But people are dealing with stuff and that's not just celiac. We've worked with someone, their father had died of Parkinson's and so their family was impacted. People have pain. Someone we worked with, they had back pain and I didn't know this. And he said, I live every day with a 9 out of 10 in back pain. You have no idea, right? People are, whether it's their family, whether it's themselves, whether it's something else, yet people go on and there's leaders out there. There's these creators that are out there that continue to push. And I think probably a lot of what you do is beneficial just to yourself to deal with whatever it is that you're dealing with on a daily basis. And so I want to continue to go down this path of talking to people in the world, in the community that have celiac, because I think there's founders, entrepreneurs, business leaders, professionals out there that are dealing every day with something. I want you guys to talk a little bit about that because you're living proof of this, right? You're creating content directly around the topic that's impacting your lives. And it doesn't always have to be so direct because sometimes they might be in a totally different industry, but they're still dealing with it. And we want to understand it. We want to share those stories and what it is that they're up to, what it is that they're creating, what it is that they're working on. But I'm sure you've seen this. I'm sure you've come across people maybe that aren't dealing with celiac directly, but they're dealing with other things. And perhaps it's impacted them to perhaps talk more about what those things might be or just to continue to push forward in whatever it is that they're doing. It's not necessarily a question. It's more of a just a topic. And have you seen this play out? Are you seeing other people? Is this the reason that you guys, is a big reason why you guys are doing this? Just to share. And also, it's why you do what you do. It's why you get up. It's why you turn this mic on. It's why you guys have these conversations too. There's something bigger going on here.
Yeah, I'll jump in first. As far as the podcast go, it's so normal for me now. I can't see myself not doing it. It's become part of my identity and it definitely gives me a lot of purpose. In the beginning, it was just a lot of fun and it was exciting. And that energy, I think, was the rocket fuel that got us going. But then once we kind of broke through the atmosphere and doing our little space thing now, it's just, this is what we do now. And yeah, I think the response that we get from people that reach out to us and when we go to the expos and people that we get to meet in person that tell us that they've been listening and you see the reaction in their face, it's undeniable. It's a visceral thing and it's a human reaction. I really can't put it in any other words. It's just like, I can't not do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And for me, the spark that was ignited was the day I was diagnosed. Within a week, it was like, I got this huge light bulb went off and I was like, how did I go from about the age of 13 to the age of 40? How was I so sick and nobody could find this? And then I went to this doctor who gave me this blood test. This is madness. And I knew within a week that I needed to do something. And that was the spark that led to the documentary, which then begat the podcast, which was, this is just madness. Like, this is just insane. And I didn't feel like there was ever a choice. I didn't know how it would all get funded. I didn't know any of that. I just knew it needed to be done. And that was on the path. And to Cam's point, there are moments it's hard to do anything for 2, 3, 4 years. And it's mind-boggling that we've been doing it. And I think what your point, Cam, and it's my point too, is the fuel that keeps us going is we hear this feedback that people need to hear what we're talking about. And that's the fuel that keeps the engine going for me.
Well, it's absolutely true. I mean, like I talked about before, I found it. I was all about it. I was there for it. And I continue to be there for it. And I appreciate that you guys are spending this time just talking about this, creating awareness around it, helping people get through it and think through it. And again, anyone, whether it's celiac or something along those lines, people are dealing with stuff. And these types of things help. The content brings people together. And something that is talked about a lot or it's brought up is medicines and cures. And are we going down this path? And I've heard in 10 years, we're going to have a cure for celiac. In your conversations and your dealings with people, because you guys have access to some great people and amazing people doing a lot of work in this community. This isn't prediction time necessarily, but do you see something coming down the line that is going to help us? Is it in our 10-year horizon? Where do you guys stand on that?
With the current pandemic situation, I think it put a hold on a lot of the research because it definitely seemed like we were building up a lot of traction. There were a lot of different treatment options that were on the horizon, and then a bunch of them failed, and then they kind of went stagnant. I do know recently, in the last couple of weeks, though, there had been two more treatment options that are pushing through further in their trials. So there is still hope, and they're attacking it from two angles. And that's what's fascinating to me. That's one of those topics that we talk about a lot is, would you take something so that you could eat gluten? Or would you rather like have a genetic change and be able to eat gluten? Like, do you want to have to take something every day? Or do you want there to be an overall complete cure? Or do you want something that will be able to 100% accurately test all of the food that's in front of you so you don't have to take or do anything and you just don't poison yourself? So it's like, it's all interesting, all the different ways that our society is going about tackling this. But where do I see it from the one end, the detection standpoint? That's pretty good. So if you take that as a cure or treatment, I would say we're there. The next two, I think we're going to be at least 5 years out just based on the timing of things. But who knows? I mean, I don't know if medical regulations change in our country and all of a sudden things are more fast-tracked, but people are aware of the risks. Like, I think celiac patients are one of the most guinea pig of all of the patients. Like, I know myself, I would put myself out there right away. They're like, hey, we're doing this thing. We got a drug that we're going to test. Do you want to be part of the study? I'm like, yeah, I'm in because I feel miserable. I got nothing to lose. Let's do it. So given the willingness of celiac patients to want to participate in studies, I'm hopeful for sooner rather than later, but I do think it's going to be at least 5 years.
Yeah.
I think the 5 years sounds pretty accurate to me, and I fluctuate. It's weird. This is one of those things where I feel like I would have thought that I was on one end and Cam was on the other, and I think we're flip-flopped a little where I feel like it's weird to think about having a cure and then me suddenly being able to eat even small amounts of this thing that has been poisoned to me because I know what it was like the first portion of my life. And then I, by accident, at one point had like the wrong kind of tortilla. So I now know what my life and like what my body does in full rejection of gluten. So it's so foreign to me now, the thought of eating gluten or the thought of having a quote unquote cure, because I know there's different things, like they're working on some things that would block the trace amounts, which I think that's needed, because that is, to me, the biggest frustration of living this is the thought that you could get gluten by a crumb of gluten, as we were talking about, Eric, about having the residue of a crouton on your salad could ruin you for days, weeks, and longer. And then the other part of it is that there's two different main known genes, DQ2 and DQ8, for celiac disease. And one is a more aggressive version. And I've read about there being like a vaccine for one of them and not the other. So that actually is something that the medical community doesn't talk about. I hope if there is a cure, and I hope it is within 5 years, as Cam is saying, I hope it's for everybody. It reminds me of that old Dr. Seuss, like the potbelly sneetches and the one has a star and one doesn't. It's like that would feel really weird to go out to a place and say, well, I have celiac, I can't eat that. And they say, well, I thought that was cured, and say, well, I'm not in that group that could get cured. That would seem really terrible to me. So I hope if there is a cure, it's for everybody. And I just fluctuate. Like some days I think I see the research and I go, this is coming, this is close. And then other days I think, hopefully in my daughter and your daughter's lifetimes, Eric, I get skeptical. So I go back and forth.
I could imagine, and I think that makes a lot of sense, to have that push and pull in different directions and not sure where it's going. But I would say what the content's doing is it's keeping the conversation alive. It's engaging new people. I hope this engages somebody, whether that's just like, I didn't know, right? I want to watch the documentary, watch the Celiac Project documentary. You have to watch it. It's just worth it, right? There's a lot of great documentaries out there. And I think people are in documentary mode right now. So, right, there's just so many that you could watch. So just take the time to pay attention to it, because I think it's worth it. And so I would say just keep creating the content, keep creating the podcast and having these types of conversations. I appreciate it. So where can they, and I mentioned Amazon, but how do they watch the documentary? Where do they get the podcast? How do they connect with you guys?
Okay, so everything is on celiacproject.com is our website. And you can basically find a link to the Amazon. Thank you for pushing people over there. So you can find the Amazon link. You can find links to the podcast there. You can listen to the podcast anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Like you said, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play.
Even services I've never heard of before we're on.
Yeah. So just check it out wherever. And we are on the main social media, just Celiac Project. I try to be very active on Facebook and get back to people, because we get a lot of questions and people commenting on things. It's interesting. You brought up the probiotics. We just had a comment today on her dealing with probiotics. So we're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and we just thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for having us on and giving us this platform to talk about celiac, talk about ourselves. This has been so much fun for me.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Eric. I really appreciate having me on too.
Absolutely, Cam. It's great to meet. And Mike, obviously we've talked a lot before. And Cam, I'm excited to chat more with you. I mean, the content brought you guys together. The content brought us together. I can only imagine the type of people you're getting to interact with. And we get to hear a lot of those conversations on your podcast and on the documentary. The content's bringing people together. We have to continue to create, continue to have these conversations, continue to talk about celiac. I'm just thankful for everything that you do. And I'm going to finish with this, Michael. Thank you. It means a lot to me. You've been there for my entire family. You've only spoken to me, but we've been going through a lot as dealing with this stuff, and it's emotional. And I'll never forget, I'm walking down the streets, and I talked about this before, but I reached out to you and sent you an email, and you emailed me back like right away. And you're busy. You have a lot of things going on, and there's just so much unknown and uncertainty with it. So I just want to thank you. And Cam, you're right there with them. Thank you.
I appreciate that, Eric. I could tell how heartfelt what you wrote to me. And I feel like a friendship has blossomed through this. I really appreciate you. And I try to be there anytime someone needs any help or guidance on this. So I really appreciate what you said. It means a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eric. And best to you and your family. And we'll talk soon.
One of my favorite things about CADSource is the opportunity to chat with amazing business leaders and entrepreneurs. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you want to connect, you can find me on LinkedIn or visit us at CADSource.com. Thank you for listening to this CADSource production, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time. When all is, play my cards right. This episode exists because of CadSource. CadSource is your content team. You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story? That's what we do. Content strategy, creation, and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at CadSource, we exist to help you create and share amazing content. And yes, you should have a podcast. We'll help you. Learn more by visiting kezcontent.com.